Welcome to the Sunny Hill podcast. This message was recorded at our Ferndown campus. For more information about service times and locations, please visit sunnyhill.church.
Okay, how's that? Good. So lovely to see everyone. I've been looking forward to this. And I have a friend here. Where's Josie? She was in the front row, but she's just gone out. Okay. I wanted to introduce you to my friend Josie. She's going to come in the middle. You can all clap her. Josie is one of my best friends in the entire world. But what you might not realise when you have a cup of tea with her at the end is that Josie is a linguist. So she grew up bilingual, speaking. Her first two languages are Spanish and Swedish. So she speaks both of those fluently. She also speaks English fluently, and she's learning German. So, you know, she's pretty amazing, bright girl. And what I've realised, actually, having friends for whom English is not their first language, is that sometimes when someone has been learning English, we're talking about you, Josie. I was just explaining how you are trilingual and also learning German. But the thing is, when you've got a dear friend for whom English is not the first language, you realise that actually the meanings of words are very specific in the British language. And in fact, Josie has taught me the meanings of words because she's come to them later on in life. Now, something you need to know about Josie is that she loves Christmas. And she loves soft cardigans and crackling fires. Yes, Josie loves cozy, right? But over the years, now and then, we'll have been doing something like, you know, we'll be going on a walk and the wind will be blowing and the sun is out. And she'll say, "Isn't this cozy?" And we'll go, "Kind of. Yes, it's cozy." Or we'll be having a lovely dinner, a steak and a salad. And she'll say, "Oh, this is a cozy dinner." And we'll go, kind of. Because actually what Josie has taught me is that cozy means something quite particular, doesn't it? We all recognize it when we see it. It's that kind of secure, safe, my tummy's full, I'm warm. There's nothing that's kind of jarring and irritating me. It's a cozy moment. And Josie has taught me the meaning of cozy. Okay, and we're really happy that you're here today. And it will become relevant why I've talked about that in a moment. So as Adam mentioned, we are well into our series on resilience at the moment, aren't we? We have been looking at resilience for 5 weeks. 5 weeks we've spent learning why we need resilience, because here comes trouble. Yes, that was our first talk. Then we learned how we can receive resilience from God when we say, "I just can't do it alone." Yes, we had two talks, Finding Hope and For Real, both of which were about when we know God, he sees us not to dodge the bullets of life, but actually to come through, and that he will beautify us and make us more like his perfect Father with more peace and joy and resilience as he does that. And then last week, the wordsmith of Adam spoke to us about it's just not fair. What a great title. I wish I could come up with things like that. That forgiveness is just, even though it's not fair. And that as we forgive, as we let those injuries, our wounded heart, our offences fall off, we are ready to be more resilient. But today, we're actually going to move on from the place that we've come, where we've said, okay, this is resilience, this is why we need it, this is how to get it. And we're going to move beyond that. But if you feel you'd still like a few more pointers or perhaps a reminder about how to build resilience, do listen back to the podcast. They're there, I think, for all eternity. I think you can listen to them. And I read this in a psychology bit of research I was doing. It says this: the capabilities that underlie resilience can be strengthened at any age. So if you're feeling that you're lacking in resilience, you can strengthen that at any age. So do go back and have a listen to the podcasts. But we're going to be thinking about what resilience is for. If we have resilience, if we're more resilient, what is it for? I had a good friend phone up, and she was due to come and visit. And she phoned up, and she was in a bit of a pickle on the phone, and she was kind of apologising, and she was clearly a little bit upset. She'd be due to come to see us. But something had she'd had a problem with her car. The problem had been resolved, but she'd found the whole thing quite upsetting. And then she'd had a diagnosis, which, again, she found upsetting. She said, these two things, that they've happened both at once, it's just knocked me sideways. I just can't face the idea of coming down. And so I talked to her on the phone, and we unpacked it a little bit, and I told her, of course, it's fine, you know, whatever. And I put down the phone, and I thought for a minute, and I thought, oh, I've actually experienced circumstances very like that in the past few weeks. As you all know, I reversed into Anthony the intern's car in a moment of rush. That was a complication to my life, which needed some sorting out, and Adam's life. Thank you. Sorry, darling. But also, I'd actually had, as chances would have it, the same diagnosis as she'd had, which is precancerous cells. Mine are on the inside of my mouth. They said, these cells are misbehaving. We need to keep an eye on them. But at the time that I'd experienced those same two things as my friend, they hadn't really registered very much. There were other things going on. There were other needs. There were other excitements going on. And so I thought, oh, wow, I must be resilient. And I thought, oh, I'll do a little moment of personal cheerleading. Yay, God. I have managed to weather the storm. Wow, God, I am becoming more resilient. I'm not suffering as much as my friend in the same circumstances, and yay me. I'm doing quite well. I put you first, and I'm weathering the storm. Yeah. Newsflash, I can be an idiot sometimes, all right? And you can bet your bottom dollar that the Holy Spirit pulled me up sharp on my spiritual pride in that moment, because my resilience is not there because of what I've done. It is there by grace. God is a good God, and he's a good God who I believe, and I think we all believe, has asked us to focus on resilience in this season. Yes, he hasn't asked every church in the world, but he's asked us. So why is God building resilience in Sunny Hill Ferndown? What is it for? And I realized I don't think resilience is for what I think it's for, because I think I thought that resilience was so that I could be a bit more cozy, a bit more comfortable and secure, my tummy full, the heat towards my back. And actually, I've realized that resilience, I don't think is for that. I've looked at the word, and I don't think there's any case to say resilience is for just my own personal comfort. It's actually, click, click. Would you mind moving us on a slide? It's actually for us to be courageous. So we have a choice when we're facing the difficulties of life, yes, but also when we're focusing on, or when we're aware of our own resilience. Is it there just to make us more comfortable and cozy, or is it so that we can be more courageous? Yeah? We're going to look at 2 Corinthians 11 from verse 23 onwards this morning, quite a big chunk of scripture. And often this is called Paul Boasts of His Suffering. That's often the title that is over it. I'm just going to give you a little bit of context. What has happened is that Paul has established the Corinthian church. It's in the second letter to the Corinthian church. He's established the Corinthian church, and then he's gone away and he's traveled, and he's actually writing this from Macedonia, about 600 kilometers away. He's writing back to the Macedonian church because he's heard word that rather than staying faithful to the gospel that Paul taught when he was with them, some other people have come into this Corinthian church and they've started to preach in a very entertaining way, in a way where they've actually been able to charge the church for their services as speakers, in a way that's made them seem popular and charismatic and entertaining. I'm sure they threw in a few jokes, a few fancy illustrations. And what they've done is actually they've now started to gossip and undermine Paul. And they've said, Paul, when he speaks, you know, he writes very strong letters, but, you know, you hardly know he's there. He's just not a great speaker. And as they've undermined Paul, they've also undermined the message of the gospel at the same time. They have thrown the baby out with the bathwater, and Paul needs to address this. He can't just let that go on, because as Paul is undermined, so the message of the gospel is undermined. So he has to address it. He wants to address it quickly, get it over with, so that they can go on and stay true to the gospel. And this is what he says about these guys. Here we go. Are they servants of Christ? Well, I am more. I've worked much harder, been jailed more often, beaten up more times than I can count, and at death's door time after time. Okay, does that sound like fun? Following Jesus is fun. I've been flogged 5 times with the Jews' 39 lashes, beaten up with Roman rods 3 times, pummeled with rocks. I've been shipwrecked 3 times. I've never been shipwrecked. You've been shipwrecked? I've never heard that. Immersed in the open sea. That's him clinging to a piece of driftwood for a night and a day. It's massive. In hard traveling, year in, year out, I've had to ford rivers, fend off robbers, struggle with friends, struggle with foes. I've been at risk in the city, at risk in the country, endangered by desert sun and sea storm, and betrayed by those who I thought were my brothers. I've known drudgery and hard labor. Many a long and lonely night without sleep, many a missed meal, blasted by the cold, naked to the weather. And in fact, Paul goes on about the personal sufferings, about the things that he's heard. He's boasting about what he's experienced. And then he says, this is moving on into chapter 12, verse 10, "Now I take limitations in stride and with good cheer. These limitations that cut me down to size. Abuse, accidents, opposition, bad breaks. I just let Christ take over." Yeah. Paul was one resilient guy, right? Yeah. He was resilient. But why was he resilient? Why did he keep going back for more? You'd think, surely, stay at home. Yes, keep calm and have a cup of tea. Why would you keep going in? And of course, if we ask that question, if we have any imagination, then we're aware that Paul actually chose the eternal instead of the temporary. He knew what had been asked of him, and he said, "No, I'm not going to stay at home and have a cup of tea. I'm going to go out, and I'm going to endure whatever it takes to preach the gospel." And these temporary issues can get in the way of our stepping out courageously, can't they? We can be led by the prevalent culture, which says, look out for number one, which says, well, if it suits me, then I'll do it, and if it doesn't, then I won't. And we can be tempted to be to prioritize that temporary comfort instead of the courage that we want to exhibit, especially when we're partway through our journey. Yes, we're all partway through our lives. We've accepted Jesus, if you've accepted Jesus this morning, and you are partway on the journey. Our verse for the whole of this series has been this: in this world, you will have trouble. Oh, let's just go back one. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. Now, that doesn't mean in this world you'll have trouble, but stay calm and have a cup of tea. stay calm, isn't it? There's an English expression, isn't there? It's on our mugs at home, keep calm and I'm a teenager, this sort of thing. Yes, it's not saying that. It's not saying just, you know, concentrate, take heart, comfort yourself, huddle in. Actually, it goes on to say something else. But when we live in a prevalent culture and when we're partway through the story, the temptation can be to grumble and complain, can't it? We think, oh, we're not there yet. We haven't worked out what is our life for. Is it really worth it? Is there any point in going on? Has God really got a plan? Actually, in Numbers 11, verse 5, there's a moment in the history of the Israelite people where they've been released from slavery in Egypt, and they are heading towards freedom in the promised land. But they are halfway through. Now, so far, they've experienced this miraculous protection from the 10 plagues. Even the killing of the firstborn, they've been protected from that. They've crossed over the Red Sea. Yes, it's parted before them. They've walked over on dry land, looked backwards, and there's their enemies with waves crashing over them. When they were hungry, God sent bread from heaven. Delicious. Apparently it was like wafer with honey. That sounds good to me. Cake for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Sign me up. Yes. But they cannot yet see the promised land. They can't focus on it. They just need to trust they're on a journey. And in that moment, they didn't. They grumbled and complained, as they did many times in that story, which is told in the book of Exodus. Do you know what they grumbled and complained about here? Melons. The lack of melons. They had a good old whinge. Oh, do you remember the melons back in Egypt? I used to have melons coming out my ears. My garden, it was full of them. Yes, oh, what I wouldn't do for a melon. I'd kill for it. You know that Moses? I reckon he's got a stash of melons in his tent. He's always got a smile on his face, hasn't he? Always looks a bit smug. It's got to be the melons, yes? And they grumbled and complained. And that was their prevalent culture. And, you know, I'm sure you know, it's around, yes? And the last thing I would suggest is that this church family has caught the disease of grumbling and complaining. I have to say, we've never met such a can-do, yes, let's, we'll have at it group. You know that that's true about us. It's part of our culture. But in our everyday life, we are surrounded and we need to be aware that we can lose sight of the long haul, can't we? We can lose sight of the journey that we're on and where we're going when we stop midway. And we stop midway through this verse. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. It says, actually, that the devil roars around. That doesn't require us to be... pressing. Oh, there we go. I've probably pressed too many times now. That requires us to be cautious. It says here, this is the Amplified Version, be sober and well-balanced, says Peter in his first letter. Self-disciplined. Be alert and be cautious at all times. So we're thinking, yeah, our resilience isn't just for our own personal comfort. We need to be aware. We're going to be tempted to use it for that because the enemy of ours, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, fiercely hungry, seeking someone to devour. He doesn't need us to be murderers and rapists in order to tempt us away from the path that God has for us. Yes, but the good news is that although in this world you will have trouble, take heart because I have overcome the world. Perhaps I'll just give you a wave. There we go. I have overcome the world. There it is in yellow. Ultimately, we would rather be courageous than cozy, right? There's no one sitting here going, no, I'd rather be cozy than courageous. We all want to get to the end of our lives and look back and say, yes, I did big things for God. But I wonder what those big things are for us. And we need to remember that Sunny Hill, Ferndown, is also on a journey. Yes, so far, this journey has taken courage over coziness. I'm going to take a moment to remind us of our story. So far, we've had the prologue, which involved Steve Robinson, who attends this church. I think he'll be preaching next week, yes? Steve Robinson and Dom having a conversation. Steve saying, my charity Prama has taken over the running of the Barrington Centre. Do you know anyone who might be interested in coming and starting a new kind of church for Ferndown, one that doesn't exist yet, one that will reach out in a way that Sunny Hill does? And what we discovered, amazing, is on that same afternoon, I kid you not, Adam and I are sitting in front of our elders, or with our elders in our former church, saying, God told us that in 2 years' time we would be ready for leadership. We've done what God asked us to, and we just feel that now we need to leave well. We don't know where God's sending us, but we need to leave well. These two things happening at the same time. Now, that's a small story for people who weren't the involved parties. But it speaks of a big God who holds the blueprint to this church. We've held on to what God has done. That coincidence, if you like, you know, coincidences are just things that happen more to Christians than other people, right? Because God is the God over the laws of probability as well, right? But that's coincidence in inverted commas. We've held on to that in times when it's been hard, in the times when we've distressed ourselves over the cost of melons. Yes? but when we've needed to hold on, you've got to remember what God has done so far. And so far, God has done amazing things. There are people in this room who are part of the launch team, who met for prayer, who met for planning. And then, you know, we worked out how to set up all this stuff. We turned out night after night to build community, to build our small groups and our sense of family. That is incredibly important to us. And we invested in that in faith and in obedience to what God wants to do with us here. And, you know, carting stuff from venue to venue to venue to venue. Yes, and we'll continue to do that. But God has been faithful. Yes? The Israelites lost sight of the story. God is doing it. He has released us from slavery. He is taking us on. He is faithful. He's been faithful so far, so we can trust him with our future. And so far, we at Sunny Hill Ferndown, we've come on a journey so far. And we must not be, nor am I suggesting that we would be particularly, but I just felt by the Spirit to remind us this morning that our resilience is not for our personal coziness. It's for courage to continue the journey that we're on. We believe we are not here by chance, that God has a big plan. Now, when I say big, it's not going to be big in other people's eyes, but my goodness, it's going to be big for the people that we impact. It's going to be transformational. In fact, let's have Erica. Would you and Dean come up? Erica and Dean, I've given them some little slips of paper because a week or so ago, I wrote to our WhatsApp group and I said, would anyone like to testify as to what God has done? And we're just going to take a little moment this morning to testify as to what God has done in certain members of our gathering, our church family. Oh, actually, while we're waiting, let's take a moment, actually, to greet the people who will be listening to this preach by podcast, yes? Because there are extra people that will be listening by podcast, so why don't you kind of give them a cheer and a hello, and then mics will pick it up. And, yeah, we're thinking of you. You can try and guess who it is, if you like. So go on, Erica, have a read.
The first one is, I stopped going to church because of despondency. I knew Sunny Hill Paul was a church that worshipped in spirit and truth. So when I discovered the church plant being set in my hometown, there was no question as to whether I should get involved. Good for you. I just know this was God's will for my life. After years of lukewarm Christianity, Sunny Hill Ferndown has awoken my dry bones in my life and in many others here in such a short time. Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can pay me later.
Who do you think that was? Do you want to stand up? Yay! Yeah. That was...
It's the very nice man.
Yeah. So Dean can do the next one. Oh, sorry.
Right. Me and my family felt like we belonged for the first time ever. The relational connections were just unreal, and there were too many coincidences to think this could be anything other than God, a God thing. I used to struggle a lot to talk to other people, and public speaking was totally out of my question. Now, I find it much easier. God is uncovering gifts that I didn't even realize I had.
Very good. Any guesses? Who do you think that was? Whose testimony do you think that was? I'll give you a clue. She's not here this morning. Meg. Absolutely, that was Meg, yeah. Okay, we've got another one here.
This starts off. We decided to visit Sunny Hill through someone we knew. I wonder who that could have been. We were looking for a church which had a good youth group and where we could grow spiritually and meet people our age. I don't know what age they're referring to. We have seen how God has moved in Meg's life and in the younger children. God is great.
Great. I think that could be. Any ideas?
Dean?
That was, yeah, that Dean. Was Dean. That's fine. That'll do. Thank you so much. So these, if you like, these are the milestones, aren't they? These are the things we need to remember. We've come on a journey. God has been faithful so far. And in fact, the integrity of God's plan is proved by what we've come through so far. Just like it was for Paul, God had brought him through so far, and therefore the authenticity of his message was proved by what he had endured and what had happened. But it's also protected. Because God is building resilience in us. God has got a plan for us to take us forward. And so he is protecting the future by building resilience in us. And it's promised. When Paul boasts of his suffering, I mean, he talks about, prior to him actually going full on for this boast, he says, it's madness for me to talk like this. I'm going to boast, but, you know, oh, it's just ridiculous. It's foolishness. Just listen to me as a fool because I'm about to boast, because he knows that his boasting isn't because he's the tough mudder of the preaching circuit or the, you know, the iron man of the sermonizing. It's because his message is so important that he knows that he's going to push in. He's not just going to take what comes at him. He's going to push in for the kingdom because he knows that his suffering is not the point. The significance of Jesus and God's grace to a people that don't know him is the point. Him bringing the good news. Are they servants? He says at the beginning of our excerpt, I am more. There are people that will go the extra mile to express the gospel. But you know what? I believe we're going to go the extra two. I believe we'll go the extra marathon. I believe that we are in it because God has a commitment to our area and he's chosen us to do our part in reaching people. He said to the disciples, go into all the world and preach the gospel. Preach the gospel to all of creation. I wonder where we need courage and resilience to share the gospel. Where do you need this in your life? Because it's wherever you live. John, who led our offering this morning so beautifully, he needs courage to share the gospel when he's in his road recovery van, pulling up by someone. Erica, she needs courage to share the gospel when she's visiting someone who is ill because she's a nurse. Yes? Now, her supervisor, I'm sure, will tell her it's inappropriate to share Jesus. So she's going to need courage, isn't she? Yes? Where Katie goes to work, and you're overseeing a care home, aren't you? And she will need courage, because this is an unpopular message. I've actually been reading a book about church history. I decided I wanted to kind of get a sense, rather than just reading about episodes, I wanted to get a sense of the arc of church history. From the very beginning, where the apostles saw the risen Jesus, to where we are now. And what I realized in this 1 hour 45 book, it's really helpful, it's called Church History 101, is that God has continued to put all his eggs in one basket. The church. Even though that basket is critically flawed at times, he has continued to say, this is the vehicle that I have chosen to spread the gospel. And there have been many low points in the church's history, points where people stopped putting Jesus front and center and chose personal power, chose money, chose political influence instead of the gospel. In fact, one of the worst things to happen was in the 4th century, the Emperor Constantine became the first politically powerful person to become a Christian. So overnight, they stopped feeding Christians to the lions, and you might have thought, that's a good thing. But at the same time, at that point, Christianity became popular. In fact, if you wanted to mingle with the rich and famous, then you had to ascribe to the label Christian. And of course, at that point, people ascribe to the label, because that's much easier than the real heart of being a Christian, which says, God, I am a sinner. You are my only hope. I put my hope in the cross of Jesus. I am all in. You have the rest of my days to do with what you like. I sign over everything to you, which is the heart of being a Christian. And of course, people didn't have to do that. The more socially acceptable Christianity is, often the less authentic it is. Yeah, and the more countercultural Christianity is, the more real it is. And here's the good news. We are in a period of church history where being a Christian is a really unpopular thing. Yes? We may not feel like we're being persecuted, our lives being threatened by, you know, the secret police banging on our door and shutting us down like they do in the Chinese persecuted church. But we are in a period of persecution where it is horribly unpopular to share your faith, to have the audacity to say that this is true and this is not. Yes, horribly unpopular. We are tolerant of people, but we are intolerant to misinformation. And for us to actually have to chip in, to put our oar in when we hear a conversation, to share a verse. Oh my goodness, did you hear that person? You know, we are going to have to be resilient. And can we take a bit of rejection? A bit of offending someone? I would say we are resilient enough to do that, and that God is making us resilient to do this. We are rebels at the moment, but we're not the kind of rebels that jump on our motorbikes and say to hell with everyone else. We're the rebels that say to heaven with everyone else. Yes, we are rebels who are kind, who are seeking other people's benefit. In fact, the Bible says, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. And when we're eternally minded instead of temporary minded, when we're concentrating on not our own personal coziness, but on courage to do what God has asked us to do the big things that ultimately we want to do for Jesus, then we need to be aware that great is our reward in heaven. I'm going to do you a picture. I know you love my art. Okay. It's another piece of fru art here. Okay. I am calling this the River of Lost Eternity. Okay. You're expecting something epic here. Okay. There is a river here. Yeah. Look at that. And the river leads to a lost eternity. And we know that the people in our workplaces, the people in our schools, the mothers that we meet at the school gate... I'm not going to put faces on all of them. No, I might do, actually. They are heading for a lost eternity, yes? They may not know it. They will be self-medicating with putting their efforts into other things, into loving their children. It's a great thing to do, but if that is the ultimate meaning of your life, you are heading to a lost eternity. They'll be self-medicating on drugs and on workaholism, all sorts of things. And I think what we can be tempted to do as Christians is to stand right over here in the corner as far away from this river as possible, standing on our lovely resilience, lovely and cozy, up here. Beautiful. We're standing on the rock. It's the rock of Jesus, and it's a cozy old rock, this rock. Do you think we're going to fulfill the Great Commission from here? Or do you think we might be more likely to reach it from here, standing right by the river with one foot in the river? We need to stay connected with our communities. And you might say, oh gosh, Fru, but you know, I'm likely to get swept along there. And true, if you come from a dysfunctional past before you're a Christian, or on a past where you were reliant on the things of this world instead of on the eternal God, the eternal good, gracious God, love him. Just take a moment to talk about how beautiful Jesus is. But if you've put these things in the past, and you can get sucked into this, can't you? You can get sucked back into your old coping mechanisms, which is why the church, metaphorically at the moment, joins hands. Yes, we stay connected with one another, because in coming together week after week, in connecting with one another, we are stronger and we are less likely to be swept along. And what if the church could be this place which was not just to teach us about personal resilience, but a source of resilience, a hospital, a storehouse? What if our church could be the church that had one foot in the water and one foot on the land, that was able to call people out of this river of a lost eternity and into a future of God's grace and mercy, where more and more people were pulled away and into the security that is to know Jesus? I wonder what doing something big for Jesus would mean for you. I've got an idea this morning. It's really practical. What if you knocked on the five houses nearest to your home with a little slip of paper with your telephone number on and said, if you get sick, give me a ring. I'll drop off whatever you need. How massive could that be? We've got an opportunity to reach out in these uncertain times. What if we did that? That would feel like it was big, right? But yet we know it's not really big, but it could be big, right? What if we doubled this church? At the moment, we have an average attendance of about 50 or 60, yes? And if we grew to 100, 120, yes, we would not get on the list of mega churches, okay? We would not be in the local newspaper, church explosion. But that would be big for us. We'd have to do things with the way that we do our rotas, the way that we train our volunteers. Big. But not just big for those 50 or 60 people who at the moment are far from God, positively epic. Yeah. It would be epic for those people to be drawn into the kingdom of God. You know, we think of doubling his size is huge. It's just not. We serve a big and magnificent God who has this in his plan. He didn't create coincidences for nothing. He's not building resilience for nothing. He's creating resilience in us so that we can become our own peace in the completion of his plan for this world. He is slow to anger and rich in mercy. He is wanting to forgive. You know, the people in Dorset are not rejecting Jesus out of rebellion. They're rejecting Jesus out of ignorance. People have not had the chance to taste and see that the Lord is good. They've just heard about him. Or in fact, they've probably used his name as a swear word, haven't they? It's ignorance, not rebellion. And the only solution to that is going to be for us to speak, for us to be willing to stand with one foot in the water, for us to hold on to each other for support as a source of resilience, because our God-given resilience isn't there for us to be more cozy. It's there for us to be courageous and to step out and to have lives of significance. We know that God is a good God. He's taken us from slavery to freedom, and he'll do the same for our neighbors. Yeah? We're going to stand and sing in a moment. We're asking God as well to break our heart for what breaks his. Yeah? For the lost. For those that don't know the gracious God that we've come to know and serve and love, who walks with us as we take the bullets. Because we can be like Paul, servants of God, real servants of God, face the trials that come naturally, but they also go out there and they fight the battles that are necessary in order to fulfill the Great Commission. Go into all the world and preach to creation. And I love the words to this song. There is another in the fire standing next to me. There is another in the water holding back the sea. Yeah. Let's stand.